This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Copper Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
But one of the things that he talked about in his press conference yesterday, I also thought was interesting, of course, about other than the quarterback play, was when he was asked about the linebacker position and the depth that is needed on. Here's what he had to say.
We're always in the market for anything that can help us from a, or any position addition that would help us. And that's one of them that's at the top of our list right now. I definitely think that's something we've talked about and I know we're on top of.
Now, here's something I find fascinating about Chad Moore since he's been the coach at Arkansas. I have never seen a coach that has been more open with the media or with the comments about how he is always looking to add depth, for one, which is good. But going the route of saying, I need to find grad transfers, I'm looking to add somebody else, even if it's at a position like it was with quarterback. For instance, when Ben Hicks was added, people felt, okay, there's this guy. He got that grad transfer. It's not the Kelly Bryant or whatever, but hey, it's still a quarterback that he's adding in. Done deal. Then Chad Morris, after all that happened, came out and said, no, we're still looking to add a grad transfer. Mm-hmm. But it kind of confused people. Like, wait a minute, I thought you already had your guy. No. They're looking to add more. And it's the same thing with linebacker. That they have some guys there. They have some pieces. The guys that they've recruited. The guys that I'm sure that they're trying to develop. But when the depth comes around, he's coming out saying, yeah, we're not satisfied where we're at right now with it. Because we're looking to add somebody else. We're looking to add pieces. And he says he's always looking to add pieces.
Well, because what's the math? Maybe you guys have looked at it a little. I think they got 5 scholarships still that aren't designated.
I think 4 because you just gave that one to the former Arizona State running back.
Running back. Okay. So you got 4 left. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they got some options with some scholarships and what to do with them. So they need to be looking for players. I know it's great to reward walk-ons that have earned the opportunity, but ultimately you want scholarship players taking scholarships.
Yeah, and you want to put them into grad transfer roles because those are the guys that are immediately eligible and immediately can be added. But it's just one of those things, too, that it's just interesting to me because Chad Morris, there's certain things he will keep close to the chest. Like when it comes to certain player situations, I mean, it's like pulling teeth to try to figure out what's going on with the players. Like, okay, is he injured? Is that why he's not participating? Is it academics? Is it disciplinary? I mean, what's going on? He keeps that extremely close to the chest and won't really talk about it. But this type of thing, and it's a great mentality to have, because listen, I appreciate this mentality that Chad Morris has, where he comes out and he says, listen, I am never satisfied with what we got. I am always going to be looking for someone better. Now, that may sound cruel, it may sound rude, and you may say, well, what about the kids that you got? He's an SEC football coach. You can't have the mentality of, well, gosh, as long as people come out and are friendly and play hard for me, then they're going to start. No, you got to get the best players out on the field. You got to get the most depth out on the field. You can't worry about being nice with these kids. I mean, you just can't. You have to win, and you have to be competitive. And so I appreciate that mentality he has. And we've heard stories like, for instance, I remember Bobby Petrino when he was at the U of A, and I think even Tyler talked about this. You know, he would come out and constantly say, he's like, hey, guys, telling his team, his players, telling his guys that, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to recruit somebody better than you. I'm going to find somebody better than you that's going to be able to come right in, play right away, and help us out. And maybe it's a motivation tactic. Maybe it's trying to get his guys in place to really focus in to say, don't get comfortable. Don't get complacent. Don't feel like you're going to be the starter just because you're the starter right now. Tomorrow, you may not be.
You know, I think it always works better when you've got uneasiness, where you always feel like you're looking over your shoulder, where you're always worried as a player. But just think about it at work. If you're always concerned about, at some point it becomes unhealthy to be worried about your job every day. But I think being a little bit on pins and needles is not a bad thing for any and all of these players, quarterbacks, linebackers, wide receivers, mm-hmm. all of them.
Yeah.
They need to feel the urgency that I've got to produce and produce today or somebody else may get my spot.
Yeah.
And when you're the quarterback, it's not like wide receiver. There's not 3 other places on the field. You know, there's only one.
Yeah.
Only one quarterback.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that when the quarterback's out there and that's the guy, that's a different position than it is linebacker, obviously, because like you said, you can only have one quarterback start. But the linebacker, You know, you lose a guy like Dre Greenlaw, you still got a good linebacker in Scooter Harris there. You got some guys that you maybe be able to at least be good practice bodies, be able to add to some of the depth. But it's just not high caliber. Mm-hmm. You don't have SEC elite defensive players just yet. Now, you've recruited really well on the defensive side of the ball this past class. You got John Chavis, who's been around a long time, who's got a long history of developing elite SEC talented players on the defensive side. You got all of that. But it's going to take more than that, and it's going to take some time. You got to figure it out right now and try to get some depth going. That's first and foremost what you got to do. We're going to be joined by Tyler Wilson, former Razorback quarterback, on the other side of the break.
Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Welcome in Tyler Wilson, former Razorback quarterback, who joins us in studio. And Tyler, I know you've been listening to a lot of the show, and there's a lot of things we want to get into with you. But, you know, just the quarterback position, especially, and the things that we were discussing at the linebacker, where Chad Moore seems like he is not afraid to just come out and say, hey, I'm looking for grad transfers. I'm looking for guys to come in right away and be the guy. Is that one of those tactics that makes the players, I'm not saying uncomfortable, but maybe just says, hey, don't get too comfortable. Don't get complacent, because tomorrow you may not have your starting spot.
That's what you call the Monday morning mentality. And in the NFL, like, the players don't come in on Monday morning, but the coaches do. And they bring in all the free agents that are on the market. And, like, you know, I was on the practice squad for a little while, on and off the active roster. And as a practice squad quarterback, they'd ask me to come in on Monday morning. And they'd bring all the wide receivers that were free agents in the league, that they're trying out, and you'd throw balls. And here comes Joe Adams one afternoon, right? I mean, there's just any free agent, but all the wide receivers. I got back in the locker room on Tuesday morning. Who was out here yesterday? Did we sign anybody? You know, but that's the the mentality of it is you never knew who they were going to bring in on Monday to try out and practice, and then Tuesday, is he going to be on our roster?
Yeah.
And so you always had the fear. I had a fear when they didn't call me in on Monday that who are they bringing in to throw today?
Yeah.
You know, so I call it the Monday morning mentality. And I think it's good. I think it's exactly what you need.
I kind of equate it, Tyler, to, like, if you're working somewhere and, you know, every desk is full, but the boss has a help wanted sign out on the marquee out front, and you kind of start looking around. Well, there's no open position. Are we adding to? No, we're just looking for more. We're looking to upgrade, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing when you get the help wanted ad running when there's no open spots.
That's right.
Yeah, and the position, obviously, with quarterback is one of the most intriguing ones, because that's something that we really dived into as well, of just, you know, for years. I mean, for the past 10 years, roughly, Arkansas and the quarterback situation has been pretty obvious for the most part. I mean, even back when you were playing, you knew Ryan Mallett was the guy. And then after you, it was... Or after him, it was you. And then after that, you had Brandon Allen. And after that, you had Austin Allen. It just seemed like it was really fluid, and the quarterback situation wasn't always just completely up in the air. But this year, you have two new quarterbacks coming in Ben Hicks and then Nick Starkle that weren't here last year. One guy's already here on campus in Ben Hicks. The other guy won't be here till July. You got another quarterback that's playing baseball. You got another guy that's a true freshman in KJ Jefferson that people really like his upside. You just have a completely crazy situation right now with Arkansas quarterbacks, ones that really Razorback fans have probably never seen before right now.
Yeah, and last time I was on the air, we talked about this. You know, it's a total reset, and you hate to use last year as, like, you know, a wash for Chad Morris, but you got so much newness in the room that is so important to you that it's basically like you're hitting the reset button. Mm-hmm. And I know that's no fun for anybody to hear, but what I really like is I think the talent is increased, regardless of who's going to be in that. You know, the guys we're talking about, whoever's going to be the starter, but even number two, three, and four down on the list, I think you've added talent to that, you know, to that room. You know, my biggest question is, you know, Nick Starkle, okay? A guy we really like, think he's got a lot of talent. He doesn't enter the equation till July, as you mentioned. Have we ever had a guy in less than, you know, 10 or 12 to 15 practices over a fall camp, you know, be able to enter the mix and be a starting quarterback? I don't think it's ever happened here at Arkansas.
That's a great point.
I can't think of one.
Which basically what you're saying is, if you had to put put some money on it right now, Ben Hicks would be your guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just based on, I mean, I don't care what business you're in, a guy only has 15 days to prove himself to be the guy that's worth running the show at the start of, day one, opening day. It's very tough, very difficult to do. I think because of that, Ben Hicks has a tremendous advantage, not only on Nick Starkle, but Connor Nolan and really all the other guys in the room.
Yeah. Well, if we were taking bets right now, I think we'd all probably say that if starter day one would probably be Ben Hicks, mainly because of that reason and because of the advantages that he has. Because right now, obviously Connor Nolan's still participating in spring practices when he can and in scrimmages when he's not dealing with baseball. But the quarterback room right now, a lot of times you have Ben Hicks and then a bunch of guys that have really no chance of playing this year.
You know, this is like the men's club at the grill, right? I mean, you're just trying to think about the players around you. What do you feel like you've got confidence in? You feel like you've got confidence in somebody that you see interacting with you every day, that is 100% committed to what you're doing, that you've seen him in the starting role before. Hey, we saw that guy. He was our starter all during spring. So you just, it's a mentality of, well, he should be our starter, you know, the day one of fall camp. It's hard to, you know, to get that mentality. I think Ben Hicks has a natural advantage because of that. He's taking snaps right now.
I was just kind of looking at the baseball schedule and thinking about spring practice from a Connor Nolan perspective. It's been fortunate that the baseball team has had a long homestand that comes to an end this weekend with a homestand. Mm-hmm. But then the football team goes on spring break. There won't be spring practice while the baseball team travels to Austin, Texas, then down to Tuscaloosa for a weekend series with Alabama. And then a one-off with Missouri State before being home again. So from a scheduling perspective and trying to line that up with practices, it all kind of works out well for Connor Nolan to be in town when practices are going on so far through the early part of spring practice.
Yeah.
And I still think it's – and y'all did this with Petrino too, where you would have one or two practices and then go on spring break. They've had obviously more than a few practices at this point. Then there's going to be a spring break and then come back and finish it up.
Yeah, I've never understood, you know, kind of that break.
The retention part, you just wonder about the retention.
Funny,
yeah,
right. And I felt like that was maybe more in Bielema's era than it was Petrino. I do remember one practice going on spring break, but, you know, they had some funny rules in there where they actually had to structure it that way. But, I think Petrino tried to maximize. He hated the breaks. I remember him talking about hating the breaks. But, you know, one of the things, too, Phil Elson – text me the other day, and I think y'all talked about it on the show, Ty, was just the mechanics difference, too, is Connell, you know, you're mentioning the baseball schedule here and different things that I think Connor, if we're going to include him in the conversation of potentially being a guy, it was always, as it relates to me, these are all things that I took into account as a challenge as a baseball player transitioning back to football, which is what we're talking about with Connor. Mechanics were always a real challenge for me, converting from a pitcher's mentality and the movements and the body movements and the length and the whippiness to a short, quick release that is vital to play, I think, at this level.
You played both sports. Tell us the differences just in the release point or the way the ball fits your hand and how it comes out. And I know that's probably overlooked by a lot of people, but just the way that a baseball comes out of your hand as a pitcher – versus a football spinning out of your hand as a quarterback, I would imagine that would create just a certain level of challenge or adjustment when you go from one sport to the other, you know, maybe inside the same day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look what, if you're trying to throw footballs at 6 p.m. and you're throwing baseballs, you know, at 12 o'clock in lunchtime, you know, you throw a bullpen, then you go, you know, work 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon with the football team. Everything you do in throwing the football or baseball is muscle memory, right? If you're throwing darts, it's muscle memory. And when you're trying to train your hand, when you're throwing a baseball, you're coming off the back of the baseball and all your fastballs, you're coming directly off the back of the ball. It's how you get maximum revolutions. And you're also, you know, trying to get maximum velocity. Well, on a football, you're coming off the side of the football. So there's a memory with the release point that's totally different for baseball and quarterback, baseball players and quarterbacks. And then, you know, you look at Tim Tebow. What was his big knock? He had this long, loose release, I had troubles with that for my entire career because I was a baseball upbringing. Well, you know, you're wanting a short, quick motion as a quarterback. So there's a lot of things that I think, you know, Connor will have natural challenges with just in trying to do both of those two things.
Subscribe to Hit That Line on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
Okay, so let's talk about this offensive line situation, because we heard Joe Craddock from the weekend talk about how improved they were, how the holes had opened up, some running backs had some great runs. Tyler, we were kind of skeptical. How much of this can we believe? We played some of this audio yesterday. I don't know if you still got that on the board, John, but, you know, I think a lot of people are skeptical when it comes, and should be, rightfully so. Got to show me first, and show me probably more than once, to prove to me that the offensive line is truly improved.
Mm-hmm. And I'm obviously not an offensive line genius by any stretch, but I've got a decent feel for it and what they asked to do in this system. And it is a lot different than what we had, you know, with the regime before and Bielema. And I think, you know, obviously slim guys down, have athletes, screen game much more important. I don't think they were able to do a lot of the things that they want to do 2 and 3 years down the road here, because they didn't really have again, I know that sounds like an excuse, but they didn't have the depth to be able to pull it off and the personnel to pull it off. And, you know, that's my biggest question. Are you able to see the game in space like I think you would anticipate seeing it with Chad Morris? You're not going to get with Bielema's guys them out in space running and blocking and blocking linebackers and blocking, you know, corners and blocking guys on the run in space. You don't see that with a Bielema style offense. You see that with a Chad Morris style offense. So not only the run game increase, but I think the screen game, guys blocking guys in space, is a staple to this offense, and you have to train guys to be able to play that way. I expect to see a lot more of that this season than we even saw last year.
Well, that was one of the things that when Joe Craddock met with the media and they were talking about the scrimmages and what the type of plays they ran, they said that they ran a lot of screen plays just mm-hmm. to try to get it down. And then the final time that they ran the same type of screen play is when the offensive line finally got out there, finally got on their blocks, and it went for pretty much a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize. That yes, it's about talent, it's about ability, it's about depth of having it on the offensive line, but it's also having guys, like you mentioned, just being able to get out there in space and be able to be athletic enough and quick enough to get out there and to get after those guys, not just blocking the guy that's nose-to-nose with you.
Well, I mean, if you only run that 2 or 3 times a day in practice, how are you ever supposed to be good at it? You know, it's like I can block, you know, trap or zone or any – I mean – I can do that and get really good at that, but screen is really hard to get good at, and it's really hard to get the athletes. And then once you get the athletes, teach them, you know, based on a certain look, where you're supposed to be at a certain time and how it's all supposed to hit. And when it hits, it can hit big. You know, I didn't see that like I expected to see it last year. And I think it's because they didn't have the personnel. If you can add some athletes in that spot, in the offensive line position, and you counter blitz and pressure situations on third and medium, third and, you know, certain downs where you're able to potentially get a home run out of it because you dialed it up at the right place and you get some athletes in space and you hit, you know, big plays because of it. I think that's a portion of offensive line play we have not seen over the last couple of years.
Well, and another factor into it as well, and this is where I find it to be interesting, because last year we know the offensive line and the issues that they had. You lose 3 of those starters on the offensive line, and Johnny Gibson, Yeldefro Holt, and Brian Wallace. They're not on the team anymore. You didn't go out and get a bunch of 4-star offensive linemen. You got some offensive linemen in the recruiting class, but not near to the level that you did wide receivers and defensive line and all of that. Mm-hmm. But just given the situation they're in, and I know they got a JUCO player as well, can this offensive line be better this year than they were last year, even though they lost 3 of their 5 starters mm-hmm. from the offensive line last year?
Well, it's a good question. Typically, turnover does not give you great results. I mean, you're going to have some some guys learning on the job, which is not a good thing to have again. But again, I think even the guys you had last year might not have been where you wanted to go long term with it anyway. So I think now you get an offseason to train your guys how you want to train them, in terms of physical. Do we run these guys more than we ran them, or that the previous group ran them, you know, in the spring last year? So can we trim them down? Can we get their bodies where we want them? Can we get their stamina and their, you know, how we run them in the offseason is very important, I think, for all the things I mentioned. You know, so I think to see a different look on the offensive line this year, much different than we saw last year.
Yeah, that's the hope. And that's where I was thinking, just by seeing a few of the practices and scrimmages that we've been able to see and seeing some highlights and some of the guys that they have coming in, that's the one thing that I did notice, is that it seems like they're, by and large, not thinner, but just slimmed up. They're guys that look like they can move a little easier than the other guys. And I guess that's where at least some of the hope can reside, and why this offensive line can be better. Because it's so weird to think that a smaller offensive line can make you better, but it might be able to in this case.
Well, I mean, that's the one thing. Bielema comes in here and he goes, oh, those Petrino guys, a bunch of slim guys, are all little bitty guys. We need to get some weight on. So then you put them on the media guide and you've got the biggest line in the country.
How'd that work out?
Well, but my point is, if you're going to have play action, seven-step drops, and you're going to work inside a pocket, yeah, you need that strong stability. But this offense is not that. The offense is, how quick can we get the ball out of our hand and then get the ball in space where you've got thin, athletic, I don't want to say thin, I mean, these guys are still 300 pounds,
right?
But you've got more athletic guys to make blocks in space. And, you know, that's a whole different mentality. And I think that's the mentality I enjoy and I have had success, you know, operating under.
What you're describing is not just lineman blocking, but you better have good blocking wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You better have personnel other than just tackle to tackle that can go out and get on a corner, get on a linebacker, get on somebody and hold them for a second or two till your guy gets downfield and gets by him.
I would say the wide receiver coach probably coaches blocking as much as the offensive line coach talks about blocking, and they have to take pride in blocking too. You know, that's in this system for sure. You know, I'd say wide receivers are as crucial in making blocks in this system as an offensive line is.
Yeah, so how, like, because when you were playing...
About eight guys that are doing blocking on every play on this in this game, right?
I mean, other than the guy that's throwing it and the guy that's catching it, that makes, you know, there you go, there's nine guys, right?
Yeah. Well, I know that under Petrino, the one thing that was always impressive to a lot of people is just how well the wide receivers did block, especially downfield. And there was a big play, whether it was Nile Davis running down or Joe Adams out of a screen play or whatever, I'd see Kobe Hamilton just there's with his guy and keeping him out of that. And I think that that's just such a tough thing to do, especially when you're recruiting high caliber wide receivers who are used to getting the ball at all the time, to say, okay, that's great, but now this is just as important, if not more important, to be able to switch it up to now you got to block. You got to get out there. You got to get physical with these guys. And I'm just curious of how can these wide receivers, and how as a coach can you make sure that it's like you got to hammer that point to them? It's like, yes, we want you to catch the ball. Yes, we want you to be out there and make plays. But you're just as vital in the blocking schemes of a lot of these plays as our offensive line when you got to be able to teach them that.
I think that was a problem at times last year, Tyler. I mean, not just blocking, getting off the ball, being physical, getting off the line of scrimmage to be available for the play. I mean, I think the timing of a lot of things got messed up last year just because the receivers got jammed at the line because they weren't physical enough.
Well, you get, I mean, what is the guy what's the guy up in – in Kansas City, Tyreek Hill, is that the guy's name? And then you got the Hollywood Brown in Oklahoma, right? Those are little bitty guys, and they've got all kinds of speed. But those big guys, you talk about getting and recruiting big receivers. Why? Because you have to be physical on the attack, especially, you know, when you're trying to block guys in space. I mean, you have to have some strength there too. And you have one or two of those, you know, what I call them jitterbugs, and those are good guys to have. They're not going to be blocking on every play, but you've got to have the other bigger pieces around it that'll supplement the blocking in space.
Yeah, because the wide receivers, it seemed like last year, they were so small. And most of the defensive backs that you're going to go up against, you either have a cornerback that's probably the same size as those small wide receivers, or these safeties that a lot of cases can be 6'2", 6'3", and much bigger. And that was another thing that when we kept talking about the recruiting class that Chad Morris had in wide receivers, really fantastic wide receivers, and we've even seen them make some really cool plays in spring. But that was the thing, is they just needed some physicality out there. They need physicality across the board, but there is nothing, I mean, at least to me, there's nothing sexier than seeing a screenplay and you got a wide receiver out there down blocking a linebacker or a safety or something like that, and then the guy just can't do anything to get past you. There's nothing sexier than that.
Ty Richardson, you got to be like the king of Instagram. When you go, you know, swiping through those Instagram and you see Odell Beckham and you see, who's the guy they just traded from the Steelers? Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown, yeah.
You see those guys going at it one-on-one. It's more fun than watching a 350 pound, like, you know, playing patty cake. Those guys are like
getting after.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like watching two. It's a dogfight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dogfight.
Yeah.
It's the lightweights. You'd rather watch a lightweight fight than, you know, in some cases, the heavyweight fights because
speed.
It's speed.
Speed.
Yeah. It's really quick and it's really physical. And that's what I think is so great about the style of wide receivers that they wanted to bring in. I'm sure these guys can make plays. I'm sure they can catch the ball great. I'm sure they're athletic and all of that. But getting physical across the board is what you're going to have to do in a lot of these plays and a lot of this philosophy. And that's what I'm hoping that you can see and why I think that a lot of these true freshman wide receivers are probably going to get a lot of playing time. You'll see some other guys like Michael Woods and guys that had experience last year. But I think it's at best served for everybody involved that you're not going to be seeing nothing against the guy. But guys the size of Jared Cornelius and whatnot, that they can't block an SEC safety and an LSU type guy. They can't hold that block. So getting physical is really important. So it'll be good to see how these tall, big receivers are going to be able to make it work.
Recruited four that fit the mold.
Yes. Yeah, it's always nice. 6'3" and over is always nice to have out there on the wide receiver spots.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.